Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, January 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital and its pain management program, led by Dr. Gordon Kuhar, treating conditions including arthritis, back, neck, and cancer pain, peripheral neuropathy, and fibromyalgia, saratogahospital.org. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Susan Bulbol, Chief of Breast Surgical Oncology and the Breast Program at New Vance Health. Get your calls in early today. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you wish. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Breast Health on today's show. We'll meet Dr. Susan Bulbol and take your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on Medical Monday, Dr. Susan Bulbol. Dr. Bulbol is the Chief of Breast Surgical Oncology and the Breast Program at New Vance Health. She joined New Vance in October 2019 after serving as Chief of Breast Surgery at Mount Sinai Beth Israel Medical Center in New York for 11 years. Dr. Bulbol performs a variety of breast cancer surgeries, including lumpectomies and mastectomies. She has a special interest in oncoplastic surgery and nipple-sparing mastectomy, and she is a hidden scar certified surgeon. She also co-authored nationwide guidelines for breast cancer treatment during the COVID-19 pandemic and guidelines for reopening during the pandemic after the initial surge. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Susan Bulbol, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ray, for having me back. This is I just love this show, and your audience is fantastic.
Well, I hope that they live up to your billing here today, and we'll find out soon. The number here is 800-348-2551. I watched a video with you before the show today in the 1 o'clock hour, and you said something that struck me. You said, for me, treating breast cancer is personal. Why is that?
It's interesting. Breast cancer, or the field of breast surgery, is many of us who are in it tend to have personal stories with breast cancer. I started, or I made the decision to enter this field as a medical student. I had already decided to go into surgery, and one of my first cousins was diagnosed with breast cancer in her 30s. And that, to me, it was a personal experience, made me realize what a difference the doctor, or and especially a surgeon early on, can make. Unfortunately, she died about 2 years later, and it really solidified my desire to make a difference in patients' lives going through this. So since then, unfortunately, many other family members have been diagnosed, so it really is a personal mission to me to, during this really difficult time in patients' lives, to make it as easy as possible.
Cancer can be brutal, and from a professional standpoint, having seen what you have seen in your personal life, is there a danger for it becoming too personal for what you do?
You know, I don't think that there is. I think it makes us better doctors going through these things personally. And it affords us a glimpse into what a patient is going through. And every single patient, just like every single physician, is different. And it allows us to have both sympathy and empathy. And it's really important.
One of the things that you do, and in what I have read about you, is you're pretty much straight out. You will not sugarcoat things. Is that a difficult thing for you to, is that a difficult way for you to comport yourself as a professional?
You know, it is. The easy thing is to sugarcoat and tell everyone they're going to do fine. There's no problem with this. That really doesn't help anyone. Making my job easier is never the goal. All of us want to be the good guy every day in life. In my job, that's just not reality. So the goal is to be upfront, and you know, we can call it direct, but sugarcoating, I never think helps the person going through a medical issue or their family. I think it's all about setting expectations, and we never know the outcome. I mean, we would love for everyone to get through breast cancer with it being a blip on the radar screen of their life. Thankfully, for the majority of patients, that is the reality, but it's not for everyone.
Dr. Susan Bulbal joins us today from New Vance Health. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Before we get to the calls and the emails, Doctor, let's talk about something we touched upon the last time you were here a little bit, and that is these nationwide guidelines for breast cancer treatment during the pandemic, which you co-authored. And I just wondered, now, I mean, we're going into year three of this thing. Have there been any tweaks to those guidelines as far as you're concerned?
No, there really have not. One of the major changes, though, when, and I apologize for the coughing, unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm recovering from COVID myself, so trying to keep the coughing at a minimum, but I apologize.
Are you feeling okay?
Getting better.
Good.
COVID is my kryptonite, so I'm getting through it, though.
Good.
But when we initially started with this in March and April of 2020, everything shut down, as we all know, including screening for breast cancer and mammography shut down. So everything was postponed. We're smarter and better prepared right now during this wave. So we are not shutting things down. And getting your screening is critically important, where that's in contrast to what we said initially is everything needs to shut down for safety. Now we know how to be safer. We are all, or hopefully all, wearing masks, especially in any medical facility, it's still a requirement to wear masks. So going and getting your screenings and your general health care is critically important. We do not want to put that on the back burner. Also, initially, all surgeries were shut down, and basically only life-saving surgeries were taking place in the initial phase of the pandemic. That also has changed. In some locations, elective surgeries have been canceled, but cancer is not elective. So cancer surgeries are still moving forward in the majority of places in our country.
We're joined today by Dr. Susan Bulbal of New Vance Health. And, you know, you mentioned that you are recovering from COVID-19, and that's good. I wonder, now I've had a chance recently to interact at a hospital with a bunch of professionals who are in harm's way, nurses and doctors, and it's scary. It's really scary. Do you find that those in your line of work, in New Vance or anywhere else that you have met, carry a certain amount of trepidation with them every day during this thing?
Without a doubt. It is a very unnerving time. And to be honest, where the rest of the country or world were told to work from home, healthcare is one of those fields that we weren't given an option. We had to go in. And we still do. And we have to be there to take care of patients. It's what we do. Some people will say, well, it's what you signed up for. But if you recall, the initial start of this pandemic, we didn't know. Were we bringing it home to our families? There were people, you know, changing in their garage their clothes that they wore to work because they didn't know, am I bringing it home to our families? So we all come home to our families and we want and need to protect them. So it is unnerving. One of the differences is, again, last year, healthcare workers and physicians were held in high esteem and they were regarded as heroes. At 7 p.m. in New York City every day, there was music playing and people banging out the window and in honor of healthcare professionals and physicians. That felt really good. And they were being honored for what they were doing. That's all gone. And now you go into the hospital and they're getting yelled at that, why can't my family member come in? I want visitors in. And it's a vastly different circumstance where, you know, they're worn out in the hospitals. It's a very difficult work environment and they're exhausted, but yet still going every day to take care of patients.
You know, most of us think that you're all heroes, and we believe it every day, whether there's music or not. Speaking of that, I'll give you a chance to catch your breath here, Doctor, for a minute. We'll take a quick break. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Susan Bullball joins us, and we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Medical Monday with Dr. Susan Bullball of New Vance Health. And Fran wrote in, could you please spell the name? So I'll spell it right now. It's Susan Bullbol. Did I get that right, Susan?
You did. Very impressive.
Thank you very much. Well, I had it written down. All right, fair enough. Let's go to the phones now. 800-348-2551 is the number. Maureen is in Hudson Falls. Maureen, you're on.
Can you hear me all right?
Well, there's a bit of a hum. It sounds like there are some bees near you, but go ahead.
Well, I'll do this on my phone then. Is this better?
Much better. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, I was excited when I heard Dr. Bullball was going to be on this program. I am a breast cancer survivor. I had breast cancer at age 24. I am now coming up rapidly on 75. It was unusual at the time that I had it. I had reconstruction, one of the first done in the United States back in 1977 or 78. And have had it revised a couple of times. I had a car accident and ruptured the implant and then had a mammogram and the girl was rough and ruptured the implant. So now I have a saline implant and I began to feel some pain across the surface of this implant the other day, and when I felt it, I felt a large lump. Now, this is the mastectomy side. There's no breast tissue there. Why would I be feeling a lump underneath the skin? And it's perpendicular to the scar, so it's not right under the scar.
Right. So you've raised several very important issues. Let's start out with congratulations on getting through everything you've been through. And that's not just physical, that's emotional also. So, you know, to go through something like this in your 20s is something that no one expects. Also, hats off to your physicians at that time for listening to you. I've seen many times where, you know, women in their 20s find a lump and they go to their doctor and they're like, oh, it can't be anything. It must be a cyst. You're too young for breast cancer.
That happen five times. Five doctors told me, go home when you grow a real breast. Come back, you know. No, it was only a friend of ours, my surgeon from when I was a kid, that said, let's whatever, get this lump out of there. So if it hadn't been for him, I wouldn't be here today. But anyway, it was hard to get somebody to pay attention.
Yeah, and that's a very common thing, much less common now. It's a good thing that we are out of the paternalistic phase of medicine, and patients are now viewed as partners. And one of our jobs is to listen to the patient. And also how much medicine has changed for breast cancer. In the 70s, mastectomy was the only option. And as you said, reconstruction was not very common. So you've really been through everything. But there is, even with a mastectomy, even with a bilateral mastectomy, removing both breasts, there is always cells left behind. And it's not a mistake. It's not bad work. That is just standard. These cells are in our body, and no one is at zero risk of developing breast cancer, even after bilateral mastectomies. So in that situation, if you notice something different, it should always be looked at and always be evaluated. So my advice is you need to get to a physician to evaluate this and see what's going on. In general, after a mastectomy, even with or without reconstruction, as a routine, we do not do mammograms. If there's an issue, if we feel something, or if you feel something as the patient, we will then do breast imaging. But as a routine, we do not do breast imaging on a reconstructed breast. So critically important that you get this evaluated. Chances are it is not anything concerning, but we don't like to go with, oh, it's probably this or probably that, and just like to evaluate it so we know factually what's going on.
Maureen, thanks a lot for the call. We're joined today by Dr. Susan Bulbaugh of New Vance Health. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. You mentioned the paradigm shift over the last decades. It's a partnership now, the doctor and the patient. And you have to listen to the patient, but what if the patient is stone cold wrong?
Well, you know, we don't like to look at this as right or wrong. It is our job as physicians to educate patients. And as I explain to patients, they come to see me for my expert opinion and recommendations. At the end of the day, it's up to them to decide to follow them or not. We can give our expert recommendations and explain why, but really the patient has to decide what to do with that.
It's a funny dilemma. Now, I don't know exactly what it says, but you have this Hippocratic Oath or something like that, where you have to basically do the right thing by your patient. But if the patient is completely wrong and you know the patient is wrong and the patient says, no, I don't want to do that, doesn't that leave you in a moral dilemma?
It is a very difficult dilemma. And I frequently, after talking about the options for how to treat breast cancer and what my recommendation is, frequently patients will say, Doc, what happens if I don't do anything? And honestly, my honest answer is, well, I don't know. But the natural history of cancer is continued to grow and potentially spread to other parts of your body and potentially die from that disease. I can't guarantee that would happen. I cannot guarantee it would not happen. But that's why we recommend treatment. Now, 99.99999% of patients will then decide to treat their cancer. But every once in a while, you'll get someone who does not treat the cancer. And then it's important to figure out why. And it usually is fear, understandably. So we then have to figure out how to approach that. And most of the time we're successful. We bring in social workers, we bring in other teams of people, but every once in a while we're not successful. And it's a very difficult, sad situation.
Dr. Susan Bulbal joins us today from New Vance Health. And Dr. Bulbal is Chief of Breast Surgical Oncology at the Breast Program at New Vance. Let's go back to our phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jim is in Matamoros. Jim.
Is supranumerary nipples predisposed to cancer?
It's a great question. So it is not uncommon to have an extra nipple, a third nipple. And people are frequently shocked to find out that what they thought was a birthmark is really an extra nipple. It does not predispose you to developing cancer. In fact, it does not change your risk at all.
Jim.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Joan is in Schenectady. Joan, you're on.
Hello, and thanks for the show today. Doctor, I wanted to follow up on something I heard in the introduction, a certain amount of focus and care given to scar avoidance rather than just scar remediation. And I was wondering about updates. I had an adenoma removed decades ago. And the doctor, the surgeon, was so careful to align the opening scar with the aureola so that it was practically invisible. I healed the same, I'm sure, but I healed some of just the injury of being operated on. I think I healed better because of that care. How many updates have there been since decades ago?
So I think that, Jen, you raise a very important issue, and it's not avoiding the scar because we still are operating. It's where to place the scar. And we refer to that as hidden scar, because if every time you have a bathing suit on or a V-neck on, you see a scar, it is a constant reminder that you had breast surgery, whether it's benign, meaning not cancer, or cancer. It's not something that we want you thinking about every day. So we pay very careful attention to where the scar is. And that's exactly what your surgeon did for you. That area around the dark portion surrounding the nipple or the areolar, that tends to heal the nicest. And that's why your very caring surgeon placed your scar in that location so that it does blend in and it's not something that you see or think about every single day.
Right. And so what I had experienced is still the current good thing to do.
Correct.
Joan, thank
awesome.
You.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And this email from Wendy. Wendy says, literally as the COVID shutdown happened, I fell on a sidewalk and my left breast took the whole impact. It was purple for weeks. I've had two mammograms since and last July was called back for ultrasound as a precaution. They said my tissue has evidence of trauma. In your experience, do you believe there could be a correlation between trauma and breast cancer? Any advice besides continuing my annual mammogram and monthly BSE? And then there's an addendum, which we'll get to, but let's answer those first.
So, Wendy, that's a very common thing. You can develop what we call a hematoma, which is a collection of blood in the breast as a result of trauma. So it sounds like you had a fall, which is a form of trauma to the breast. The fact that you were evaluated is great for you. So impressive that you checked it out and continued to check it out and seem to keep up on your screenings. But yes, you can develop something called fat necrosis in the breast, which has a very clear indication on a mammogram, meaning a breast imager or a radiologist can look at that and say, look at a finding on a mammogram and say, oh, that looks like fat necrosis. Did you have any trauma to the breast? Again, that can be as a result of surgery or a fall, or someone can be in a car accident and the seatbelt can cause something like that. So those are very common things. The important thing is just what you did. You noticed something and you had it evaluated. So, Ray, we really want to get that message out. If you notice something, please get it evaluated. Very, very important and potentially life-saving.
We're joined today by Dr. Susan Bullball. And Wendy goes on, and getting to your last point, doctor, this is interesting. Wendy says, my 26-year-old daughter laughed at me when I asked her if she does her BSE, which I assume to mean breast self-exam. When is it recommended women start BSE? And again, that's from Wendy.
So, Wendy, again, a great question. And there are different guidelines. And one of the guidelines now is don't even do it. And the reason why that's stated is it creates anxiety. I don't know. I think women are pretty resilient and can handle different amounts of anxiety. The important thing is to know what your breasts feel like, because that's really the only way you will pick up a change. So important to do a breast self-exam on the same day of your cycle. If you still are getting your periods, do it on the same day. Do it on the last day of your cycle, which tends to be when your breasts are less sensitive. But, you know, standard recommendations always were do a breast self-exam every month. To be honest, I don't really know anyone who does that. But, you know, several times a year is a very good thing to do, because that's when you start to know what your normal is. And everyone's norm is different. So if you know what your norm is, you'll know when something new occurs. And that's when you have to go get that evaluated.
We're joined today on this Medical Monday by Dr. Susan Bullball of New Vance Health. And let's grab one more call here before the next break. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Drew is in somewhere in New York. Where are you in New York, Drew?
To be honest with you, I have no idea. I'm on my way to Vermont, though.
Right,
so
fair.
Thank you, doctor, for being on, because it has made this road trip a lot more entertaining.
Well, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, so my question, doctor, is when it comes to deciding whether or not to have breast reconstruction, in your personal practice, what are the statistics on women who choose to have reconstruction after a mastectomy, those that may not, and what are the ethics and medical dilemmas that come with those conversations around choosing to reconstruct or not?
Okay, so Drew, I'm happy that we can make your ride better. I certainly hope that you're on hands-free telephone here and driving safely. So reconstruction, as evidenced by our first caller who said in the 70s she was one of the first people to have reconstruction, is something new but yet been around for a while. And the techniques of reconstruction improve and change all of the time. To answer the last question, what's the moral dilemma? There is no moral dilemma for us. The major thing is that the woman undergoing a mastectomy has the option of reconstruction, and that she meets with a plastic surgeon to discuss her options. And then what she's doing and what that allows for is that the patient is making an educated, informed decision. Because at that point, certain numbers of people and certain percentages of patients opt not to have reconstruction. And that is absolutely fine as long as it's an informed, educated discussion and decision. That's really the important thing here. So the statistics vary, and, you know, different places in the country. Unfortunately, many places do not have a plastic surgeon available to do breast reconstruction, and that is really unfortunate. And it's such a big issue that in New York State, a law was passed that reconstruction has to be discussed with the patient by law, that it must be discussed. It doesn't mean that it has to be available, so the law definitely falls a little short. The other issue is insurance companies are mandated to cover breast reconstruction. Now, patients still have their deductible and all that, which at times does make it unaffordable for patients, but for the most part, breast reconstruction is covered. The important thing about that is, let's say today someone has a mastectomy and decides, I do not want breast reconstruction. That's okay, but 5 years from now, they change their mind and say, I do want breast reconstruction. It is still covered by insurance, and that's critically important.
Drew, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much. And drive safely, as Dr. Bulbul says. It's Medical Monday, and we will be right back. Vox Pop, it's Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. We're joined today to talk breast health by Dr. Susan Bulbul of New Vance Health. And a couple of emails here, doctor, and then we will get back to the phones. And interestingly, I think our caller on line three also emailed, and I'm going to make that guess. And we'll just do these emails, and then we'll get back to our caller from New Paltz. This one's from Mark. Mark writes, there's a lot of conflicting info out there. Please set the record straight. What is the official recommendation regarding how often a woman should get a mammogram and at what age should they begin? What advice do you have for those who are afraid to get them? And that's from Mark.
Mark, that is such an incredibly important issue. It is very confusing out there. The standard recommendations are that for average risk women, they begin screening mammograms at 40 years old and continue every year. And that's pretty much what we stand by at New Vance and what most overseeing bodies for breast cancer stand by. So starting at age 40 and every year after that. If you have dense breast tissue along with your screening mammogram, you should be having a screening ultrasound. When a woman has dense breast tissue, it means that there's more breast tissue than fatty tissue, but it does make the mammograms more difficult to interpret. And the reason for that is, on a mammogram, breast tissue shows up as white. Fatty tissue shows up as gray or black. Masses also show up as white. So when we're looking for a white mass on a white background, much harder to see than when we're looking for a white mass on a gray or black background. So we don't want to eliminate the mammogram, but we want you to have an ultrasound in addition to the mammogram. And that's starting at 40 and every year for average risk women. There may be women who should get mammograms earlier, but that should be discussed with your physician.
And this is from Judith, and Judith writes, one of my four friends who had reconstruction, of my four friends who had reconstruction, all are sorry due to pain and discomfort. What makes the difference between successful and unsuccessful reconstruction?
Judith, it's what is success? Who defines it? It's a very personal thing. So, you know, what one person says looks great, another person may not be so happy with it. Some women may be okay with some discomfort and others not. So success is really in the eyes of the beholder.
Is there always discomfort associated with a reconstruction?
No, there's not always discomfort. So, you know, if there is It's about speaking to the plastic surgeon or physician to say why and what can be done for it. Sometimes it's something as simple as physical therapy to stretch out and loosen everything up. Other times it's more involved, but that's the discussion between the patient and the physician.
We're joined today by Dr. Susan Bullball of New Vance Health, and let's jump back to the phones. The number is 800-348-2551, and we go to Cairo, New York. Claudia, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. I've had two mastectomies 14 years apart and have done reconstruction. And when I was out in California, I sat in on a breast group that my sister was running, and many of the women were having scans done, even though their breast tissue was removed. Is that something you're familiar with or know about or even know what it is?
Yeah, Claudia, I'm familiar with it. It's not recommended as routine to have any sort of breast imaging after a mastectomy. If there's an issue, if you feel something, if the physician feels something, then by all means, breast imaging should be done. But just as a routine, it is not recommended.
So it's not something I should worry about in terms of recurrence. That's really where I was at with it.
Well, what's important is that you continue to have yearly physical exams. And that is after a mastectomy. You know, as I had said earlier, everyone is always at some risk. After a mastectomy, your risk decreases, but it does not get to zero. So still important to undergo yearly exams. And the other thing, and Ray, we've not touched on it, but the other thing is genetics and genetic testing. So with a history of breast cancer, if you did not have genetic testing at the time, something that you should discuss with your physician.
Just a quick question. After my last mastectomy, I'm now 73 years old. I was told I didn't need to see a gynecologist anymore, so I don't get exams. I did have my uterus removed, but not my ovaries. Are you recommending I should have a gynecologist?
No, your primary care doctor can do and should do your breast exams. Gynecologists are not the only physicians that should. I would speak with your physician about whether they think you should see a gynecologist or not. I certainly don't want to chime in on that. But breast exams you should definitely be having every year that your primary care doctor can do.
Claudia, thank you very much for the call. Well, you mentioned the possibility of inherited breast cancer, and I understand 5 to 10% perhaps of breast cancers linked to this genetic mutation, in addition to the lifestyle, environmental, hormonal factors we have talked about. How do you counsel a person, or first of all, how do you decide, all right, this person had a lot of cancer in their family, we better do that blood test?
It's actually interesting. And several years ago, there were some studies done looking at if we just follow the standard guidelines for genetic testing after breast cancer, are we missing any people with mutations? And it was found out that we miss a lot if we follow these very strict criteria. And American Society of Breast Surgeons updated their consensus statement and guidelines saying genetic testing should be discussed with every patient who has breast cancer. And those are the guidelines that we now follow. The disclaimer is I helped write them, so I hope I follow them.
Dr. Susan Bullball joins us today, and you're being quite a trooper here as you recover. You're okay? You're going to make it?
No, I'm good. I'll make it.
All right, we only have about 10 minutes to go with Dr. Susan Bullball, and let's go back to the phones. And, whoops, wrong number. Sorry about that. Elizabeth of New Paltz. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, first of all, the question I had was about pain during a biopsy. if pain is to be expected during a biopsy, the surgeon should warn you in advance so you're not surprised. But what I want to know is, this was at least 10 years ago, I had a breast biopsy, and it was extremely painful. And I don't know whether the doctor didn't wait for the Novocaine to take effect, or if it goes so deep that Novocaine isn't going to work. And the second part of the question is, I had mammograms afterwards, and there was a lump there, and the mammogram technician said, oh, that's probably the marker. And the doctor didn't tell me that a marker is always placed when a biopsy is done. So I'd like you to comment on that, because if something's going to be done or if it's going to hurt, it really helps to be warned in advance. Okay, that's it.
Okay, doctor.
No, Elizabeth, I think those are good points that you raised. My feeling in general is if someone comes near my body with a needle, it's going to cause pain. So that's just my feeling in general. So I think we would love to be able to perform procedures without pain, but everything on some level is going to hurt. And pain is a subjective finding, so it's difficult to say, well, how much pain? Novocaine, usually a short-acting substance called lidocaine, is used for biopsies. And the onset is instantaneous. So it's not as though you have to wait, 10 minutes or some time frame. If it's not enough, and this is important for all of our listeners, if you are still feeling pain, it's not being a hero to say, please stop, I need more numbing medication. That is what we should be doing.
He just jabbed it right into me. There was no chance to say, oops, it hurts. Can you give me more? And I had surgery under my arm to remove a lump there, and they used Novocaine, and I had no pain from that. And so that was a shock when he just shoved it right in, and it was intense pain.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and sometimes it's the location and, you know, where are the nerve fibers? And those are not things that we can see, but you certainly feel them. So sometimes it's difficult to predict. But just in general, numbing medication works very well. It does not alleviate the feeling of pressure. The job is to alleviate that pain feeling that you're describing. The other point that you raise is that of a what we call a clip. And that is not anything that you feel. We can see it on a mammogram, but it's not a lump. It looks like what we describe as a clip. It's very tiny. It's a few millimeters in size. And whenever we do a biopsy, we mark the location with a clip. And it's a very important part of the biopsy because we want to know where we were. Sometimes when we do an ultrasound biopsy or a biopsy with the mammogram machine, the entire area that we're intending to biopsy is removed. If we do find cancer on the pathology, when we look back at the imaging, it's all removed, but that clip is there marking the location. So it's critically important to have that clip there.
Okay, Elizabeth, thank you very much for the call. Dr. Susan Bulbal joins us from New Vance Health. Carol is in Massachusetts. Carol, where are you in Mass?
I'm in Brimfield, Massachusetts.
Well, nice to have you on the program. You're on with Dr. Susan Bulbal.
Yes, hi. I'll make this quick. If you have a lumpectomy and you get a call 2 days later that says they didn't get the margins, they didn't get clear enough margins, so they have to go back in again and do another lumpectomy or make the margins clear, what are the ramifications of that, and does that happen very often, and what does it really mean?
Yeah, Carol, it's a great question, and it is a very common finding. So if you think of the area of that we remove during surgery in a lumpectomy as a box or a cube, there are six sides to it, And the goal of cancer surgery is to have clear margins on all six sides. So we don't want cancer cells at the margin or in some with some types of cancer even close to the margin. During the surgery, it's impossible to tell that. And it's a very careful balance because we don't want to be taking out, you know, too much breast tissue. We don't want too little. We just want enough. And sometimes that's very difficult to tell. If we look at the literature, meaning all the studies out there, that can happen up to about 30% of the time. It depends, and I think it's a reasonable question as patients are speaking to their surgeon to say, what is your re-excision rate? Or what's the chance of this happening to me? It's an important question because each one of us have different re-excision rates, but it is not an uncommon finding.
Carol. Okay, great. I just wanted to know more about it. I'm actually a nurse, but I had really no experience with going back in looking for a clear margin. I mean, I'd heard of it, but I thought, how does this happen? How often, and is it a bad thing to happen? So you've answered my questions. Thank you.
Yeah, good luck with everything.
Carol, thanks for the call. Dr. Bulbaugh, we only have about a minute here, 90 seconds or so. And in that time, it occurs to me, most people don't want to think about cancer. It's just, if you think about it, you think about it fleetingly. What's the biggest misconception about breast cancer today?
Really, is that it's a death sentence, because the reality is the overwhelming majority of women who are diagnosed with breast cancer go through whatever treatment they need and never have another problem from breast cancer again. That's the goal, and it's all about early diagnosis.
But can there be something like too early checking?
You know, it's debatable. We know that something called ductal carcinoma in situ, which is what we call pre-invasive cancer because it does not have the potential to travel to other parts of the body. It just stays in the breast. So the question is, well, why do we need to treat it? And it's because for some patients, it will just stay in their breast and not cause one other issue. But for others, it will progress and become an invasive breast cancer, which has the potential to travel to other parts of the body. Today, in 2022, we don't have a way of differentiating those two types. That will stay there and not cause a problem, or those that will progress and cause a problem. So we treat them all. We are doing studies to try to figure out how to differentiate that. And I suspect in the future, we'll only be treating those that will potentially progress and cause a problem. So there's a discussion of, are we over-treating breast cancer? And for some, we are. We just don't know who they are right now.
Dr. Susan Bulbaugh, we're going to have to leave it there, and I hope that you come back again. You are a tremendous guest.
I would love to, Ray.
You fought through all this illness, and you did great. So we'll talk to you next time. Maybe this pandemic will be over. You come in the studio. Meantime, have a great rest of your new year, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, and thanks for doing what you do.
Thanks a lot. Support comes from Woodland Pond at New Paltz, a senior living community situated at the foot of the Shongunks near Education, the arts, outdoor activities, and more. WoodlandPondNP.org. Once again, thanks to Dr. Susan Bulbaugh of New Vance Health for joining us today. Thanks to Dr. Zach Malloy at the controls. Allie Peterson screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's car maintenance und repair with Gordon Fricke. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.